This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Eric Burdon, was the lead singer of the English band The Animals, which was part of the British invasion of the mid-60s. Their hits included House of the Rising Sun, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, and We Gotta Get Out of This Place. After moving to the U.S., Burdon formed a new version of The Animals, which had such counterculture-era hits as Sky Pilot and San Francisco Nights. He also co-founded the band War. Burdon was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995. He's now performing with the New Animals, and he's written a memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. Let's start with The Animals' first hit. Eric Burdon, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Now, House of the Rising Sun had been more of a folk song. Can you talk a little bit about your approach to singing it?
I started out as a folk fan, so I was quite comfortable with using a folk-oriented song in a rock band. I mean, we were essentially... We grew up in a town where there was lots of club action, and there was lots of local folk artists that were true folk artists. They weren't, you know, folk music in Newcastle, in my hometown, didn't mean that you had to sit around a campfire with a guitar singing We Shall Overcome, you know. To us, we believed that folk music truly meant what it said. Music of the people. And we had local folk heroes who were like, one guy worked in a pit and he was a deputy, and that meant he was a boss on the line in a pit.
And the coal mining pit.
Yeah. So he worked hundreds of feet underground. And he would, his name was Johnny Handel, and he was our local hero. And he would sing songs about, wrecks on the high sea, because we were a seaport. If there was a mining disaster, he would sing about that. He would sing about the cost of living, the unemployment that went on and on and on since World War II on through till we were teenagers. So he was very real and very tangible and locally high profile kind of guy. Everybody followed him. And one day he walked into one of the nightclubs wearing a black suit, white shirt, black tie, which was really unusual for him, whipped out a guitar and started singing, "Well, since my baby left me." And we went, "What happened to John?" And, we suddenly discovered American rock and roll.
After you started recording with The Animals and you started having hits, you were playing on the same venues as the Rolling Stones and the Beatles.
Yeah.
And to America, this was the British invasion era. So, you know, all the British bands were kind of grouped together into that British invasion. How did you see yourself compared to the Stones and the Beatles? And how do you feel like that you were positioned by, like, your manager and by the press?
Well, I took one look at the Stones one night. I mean, I'd met Mick before. I'd jammed with him down in London, in Reading, which is not far from where they grew up. Collectively, the Stones grew up. And I would travel to Paris to buy records and to London to buy records. And then I would stop off at Alexis Corner, God bless him, his club, where there was the first British R&B movement there. And the Stones and myself, you know, before we were Animals, before we were Stones, we all crowd into this room and listen to these guys interpreting American music. And it would just blow our socks off, you know. So we'd stand in line asking Mr. Corner, "Alexis, please, can we sing, man? Can we jam with you, you know?" And he'd say, "Yeah, okay, tonight, Mick, Eric, do you know Elmore James's, Key to the Highway?" "Yeah." And we'd get up and we'd jam. "Yeah. Okay, then they became, then we all went home and we thought about it and we started our own bands and we became the Animals. And we didn't have any idea that down in London, the Rolling Stones become the Stones. What overnight grew from a brotherhood of musicians, worshipping black Americans, worshipping American culture, trying to spread the word to audiences by every night saying, look, we're going to play a tune now. It's called Roll Over Beethoven. But you can get this record at your local record store tomorrow by Chuck Berry. Please, buy the record by Chuck Berry. Don't listen, you know, take my advice. Don't listen to me. That was one of my favorite slogans at the time. We had T-shirts that said, John Lee Hooker for president.
Let me play another recording that you made with the Animals, this one in 1965. It's We've Got to Get Out of This Place.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is dead before your time is due, I know. Watch my daddy in bed and crying. Watch his hand been turning gray. He's been working and slaving his life away. Oh, yes, I know. He's been working so hard.
That's Eric Burdon and the Animals, recorded in 1965. Eric Burdon has a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. When you were singing the song in 1965, you were still living in Newcastle where you grew up?
No, by then I was ensconced in London with the band, but in an apartment that we shared.
You grew up in Newcastle, which is a coal mining town.
Yeah.
Did you want to get out of there? Did this song express the sentiment of how you felt?
I wanted to get out of everything. we saw imported American movies and French movies and at the local theater that would show anything that was X-rated. And we would make our way in there by hook or by crook. And we'd see these movies when we were supposed to be studying at college, at art school. And it was like, we want to be there. We want to get there. This song became an anthem for different people. You know, everybody at somewhere in their life wants to get out of the situation they're in.
When you were growing up in Newcastle, did your father work in the mines?
No, he was lucky. He was an electrician. But he took me down a mine one day because he used to do the electrical servicing of the pits, the collieries. So when the pit was shut down and all of the miners were away on holiday, he took me down the shaft to the pit floor. And I stood there in a total freezing cold darkness, and it was damp, wet water dripping everywhere. And funny enough, it was called the Rising Sun Colliery. And I just knew that he did that to let me know just what it was like to be down there.
To discourage you from having to work there?
Well, yeah, because everybody wanted to work in the mines. It was the best money you could possibly make, because it was the most dangerous job. And it would have killed me off real quick because I'm an asthmatic, you know. I've been all my life.
With your voice, you're an asthmatic?
Yeah.
But you have such a big voice. I mean, I was going to ask you how you've stopped yourself from blowing out your voice, because you put a lot into that.
Well, you know, if you're an asthmatic or some other related ongoing lifelong affliction, the best thing to do is to make friends with it, is to kind of make friends with whatever it is that's bothering you. And the one thing I've found about asthma is it's kind of like it overrides me going into mania. It keeps me in my place. But it's also helped me find a place on stage, performance, in front of people.
How?
Because the adrenaline is so high from doing such a thing that it helps, you know. My asthma pushed me, my affliction pushed me in two directions, motorcycles and music. Both my lifelong love affairs with machines and music.
My guest is Eric Burden. He's written a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Eric Burden of the band The Animals, and he has a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. Why don't we listen to the song that your book takes its title from, your 1965 hit, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. I've always really loved this record. Where did you get the song from?
I heard Nina Simone sing it.
Really? And, I didn't know she sang this.
Oh, yeah. And I was a big fan of Nina. And one night, Linda Eastman suggested that we go see her at Hunter College.
This is Linda Eastman, who became Linda McCartney.
Linda McCartney, sorry. I still think
you know her way back.
Yeah. And I said, oh, come on, Linda, we can't. Yes, and I've got it set up. You're going to meet her backstage. Oh, really? So we, after the show, which blew my mind, completely had me mesmerized, we went backstage, and I was further mesmerized to see that when the autograph hunters had dissipated, that Nina was left sitting there at her dressing table with her manager, who was an ex-Chicago cop, I think, and her guitar player. And she looked up at me and said, so you're the little white that took my song. And I said, yeah, you could say that, you know. And she said, well, you know, thanks for screwing it up or whatever. And I said, listen, if you'll give writer's royalties to the guys in Angola State Prison who are down there still working under the hot sun in the sugar cane, if you'll give them the acknowledgement for recording a work song that was on one of... Wait a minute. Okay. My name's Nina Simone. What's your name? It's Eric Burden. She said, oh, cool. We shook hands and we were sort of friends from that point on. I haven't seen her in a long time, but wherever she is, God bless her.
Well, why don't we hear the 1965 recording by Eric Burden and the Animals, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Baby, sometimes I'm so carefree with the joy hard to hide, and sometimes it seems that all I have to do is worry, and then you're bound to see my other side.
My guest, Eric Burden and the Animals. Eric Burden has a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. Now, before you started singing rock and roll, you sang jazz. What kind of material were you doing?
Big Joe Turner, Jimmy Witherspoon were my heroes. I listened to a lot of Count Basie. I listened to a lot of, what was called...
Jump blues kind of stuff you were doing?
Well, yeah. That was my love. I mean, that was the stuff that I loved, was jump jump blues, rhythm and blues. But I also liked cool, you know, West Coast Shorty Rogers and all that kind of stuff. You know, I couldn't wait to go beyond New York and the Deep South, but also get to the West Coast as well. Because I knew from reading and research that a lot of the players who were a part of the black urban drift who came up from the Mississippi Delta, they moved through Detroit to get jobs. And then if they become successful at recording and they made a little dough and they traveled a lot, they would eventually find themselves out on the West Coast.
When you got to America with the Animals, I mean, so much of the music that you loved was from America. Did you meet any of the people who you had idolized when you were living in England?
I met most of them before I left England.
Oh, singing at clubs there?
No, there's a venue in my hometown, the City Hall. It was the only venue available for top-ranking jazz stars and, musicians of every caliber. And I stood in one doorway every night. And in this particular doorway, guaranteed I could meet anybody that I ever wanted to meet. And because of that doorway, I met Louis Armstrong when I was 11 years of age. They took me into his dressing room.
Oh, really? That was nice of him.
His trombone player took me in. Jack Teagarden came out. And they heard that I was singing along with all of the songs. Some cop, I think a cop went in there and said, there's this kid out there, man, in the doorway, you know, can't afford to get in. He's singing along with all his songs, you know. And then Jack Teagarden came out, towering way above me, you know. I said, come in, I want you to meet Pops. I want to show you something.
My guest is Eric Burden. He's written a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eric Burden. He first came to the U.S. as the lead singer of the British invasion band The Animals. His new memoir is called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. You know, it's funny. The Animals started recording in 64. By 67, there was the New Animals. It was a new band that you were playing with. Yeah. And your material had changed. And I imagine your way of performing had changed. And a lot of the culture had changed. You know, by 67, you're talking more hippie culture. You're doing LSD. There's light shows on stage. You're singing San Francisco Nights. So it just seems like such a dramatic change in just a couple of years. I'm wondering if you could compare the experience of singing on stage, say, in 1964, at the beginning of that whole British invasion era, with singing in 67.
Well, yeah. I mean, everything changed. The most important thing is that our minds had changed. And that's part of the lyric of one of my songs. Walls move and minds do, too, you know. The Animals had arrived in America and did 2 years of touring in America. We'd passed through San Francisco. We'd been to the Hungry Eye to see Lenny Bruce. It was still Bongo Mongo. You know, everybody was wearing black, reading Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And then when I went back, it was like somebody had just taken tons of paint and just plastered the place with graffiti and paisley colors. And even you got off the plane at the airport and everybody had long hair and you could smell incense and marijuana everywhere. Now, what happened here? I mean, this is incredible. So I got a girlfriend who called me. She lived in Sacramento and she said, you got to come out and see what's happened to San Francisco. You won't believe it. And I never went back. I thought, this is great. This is the future. We're going to change the world, you know. We're going to really change things.
Well, why don't we hear one of your recordings from that era? You want to hear San Francisco Nights?
Yeah, you can play that, yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
Strobe lights beam, creates dreams. Walls move, minds do too. On a wall, San Francisco night. Oh, child, young child, feel all right.
on a warm San Franciscan night. Angels sing, leather wings, jeans of blue, Harley Davidson's too. On a warm San Franciscan night. Old angel, young angel, feel alright on a warm San Franciscan night. I wasn't born there, perhaps I'll die there. There's no place left to go. San Francisco.
That's Eric Burden and the New Animals, recorded in, what, about 67?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 67, yeah.
And Eric Burden has a new memoir called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. In the back of your memoir, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, there's a photograph of you. And in this photo, you're rolling a joint and licking it. And on the table is a gun.
Yeah.
What's the gun doing there?
Well, I had to come to America to experience America. And one of the biggest experiences one can have in America is you can own a gun, dude. You have the right to go out there and shoot yourself in the foot. And it's become such a way of life for us that we've forgotten how wicked it really is, you know. But being wicked is part of the thing, you know, that you go out in the world to discover how wicked you can be, how bad you can be, man. I want to be bad, you know. I want to be American. Yeah, I'm in America. What do? I go out and buy a 44 Magnum. In fact, I didn't buy a 44 Magnum. Somebody came to a gig in Wyoming, Billings, Montana, correction. They came to my door with an oily rag, and there was a 44 Magnum in it. And they said, this is a gift from the people of Wyoming. You know, may it protect you. May it serve you well. That gun got me into so much trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I don't want to go into it because it's detrimental to my mental health. But I only know that one night I threw it in the swimming pool. And my wife called Jimmy Witherspoon. And Jimmy Witherspoon came up to the house and he said, "What's that piece doing in the pool, man?" And my wife said, "It's Eric's hunting gun. He doesn't want it anymore." Man, he takes his clothes off, jumps into the pool, retrieves the gun. He had it until the day he died. And I would get messages from him all over the world from people who had met him and run into him. And he would send a message saying, "Just tell him I got his gun. I got his gun. And it's cool. It's in good condition. It's oiled and it's ready to go."
Did you give up wanting to be bad?
Yeah, after I loosed off a couple of rounds one night trying to get rid of another well-known rock star and realized what damage I could really do, I kind of swore that I'd never touch a weapon again. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't stop me having a fascination for it. I still know every caliber of every gun that's out there. Know thy enemy. Know what you're up against. But I've thrown in the towel on that score.
Now let me ask you, you're approaching 60. Mm. What did you imagine 60 would be like when you started your career?
I never thought I'd live to see 35. I believed that I wasn't going to live that long. I never really ever saw myself, except one time on LSD. I had a hallucination where I saw myself as an ancient old man with long white hair down to my knees and a long white beard. But that's another story. Charlton. But I never thought I'd live to see 60. In fact, I cannot think as a 60-year-old person. It's impossible. And my fans are getting younger, you know. Kids who come to my shows, and especially in Europe, where they're allowed to come with their parents, where alcohol is sold, which doesn't happen in the States, they're 13, 11, 12, 13 years of age. It's amazing.
Well, Eric Burden, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Eric Burden's new memoir is called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. He's now touring with the New Animals.